Shabbat Shalom, everyone. So, about a week ago, there was an article in the New York Times by Michelle Goldberg with a title something like, Democracy Grief is a Real Thing. And it was a, I don't know if you read it, it was a really powerful reflection on a real psychological condition which seems to be developing in our world now. And it's a lot like something that's been around for a little while longer that we call climate grief. We know what that is, don't we? We see a climate devastation happening around us, and we are fearing more and more that we've crossed a threshold, and there's nothing we can do about it after a certain point. And so that can create this horrible sense of despair. Well, the same kind of thing seems to be happening with lots of people, Michelle Goldberg writes, with democracy grief, that we are witnessing the corrosion of our own democracy in all branches of government, the executive branch to Congress, to the judiciary. We are seeing it not just in this country. We're seeing it in England. We're seeing it in Israel. We're seeing it in democracies all over the world that seem to be decaying to be replaced with what? With totalitarianism? So it's no wonder that apparently this has been quite a boon in business for a lot of therapists lately, that there are lots of people whom she describes as unable to cope anymore with this as really a kind of grief. In the like any grief, the reality of the loss, they can never escape it. It's just constant. They can't ever get away from the pain of the awareness of this precious thing that's being lost all around us. We all relate to that. I think we all got it. Whether we are right wing or left wing, we've all got it in our society. You know, there's one thing, though. Those of us who work in various ways in counseling people, there is a silver lining to all of this when we think about how we help those who are grieving. That there is a way through it to the other side when you are grieving something. That it begins with the ability to name the thing that you're grieving about. Because once you can name it, then you can work with it. In this week's Parsha, we have the story of Joseph. He was thrown into the pit, and then he ends up in the household of Potiphar. And this is a very well-known story as well. He rises to the top, and Potiphar thinks he's the bee's knees in terms of his devotion and his hard work. And so does Potiphar's wife, because he's literally described as a really good-looking guy, and she tries to seduce him, and he very famously, with great struggle, refuses her, and she then is jilted. So she frames him, and he ends up being thrown in jail. The Sfat-Emet comments on this episode, and he actually reflects on what Joseph went through, and he says the following. He says, there are two kinds of trials that we go through in life. The first trial is when we are challenged with some kind of difficulty, but it's a difficulty that we can ultimately manage. It might be a horrible thing, but through the force of our own sheer will, we can overcome it. So, for example, you, God forbid, lose your job, right? It's a horrible, horrible thing to lose your job. But ultimately, if you're in a society where the economy is okay, you can send your resume around and you could ultimately get another job. That's the first kind of trial. Then the Sfat-Emet says there's another kind of trial that is such a great, devastating, catastrophic loss or difficulty that by sheer force of your own will, you cannot fix it. And he says, what you do in a situation like that, he says, at that moment, you let go of your free will. Now, that's a very bizarre thing for a rabbi to teach. To let go of your free will, there is nothing more Jewish than the teaching that God created each and every one of us with the free will to choose between doing the right and the wrong. So what on earth does he mean by letting go of your free will when faced with a devastating loss. And he basically explains it in the following way. He says, look at what Joseph did at the moment that the wife of Potiphar is trying to seduce him. He says he begins to speak out loud to her what his travail is in that moment. He says, your husband, who chashach mimeni me'uma ki imotach, he has withheld nothing from me save you. How can I do this and go against him and also v'chatati l'Elohim, and I will have sinned against God if I do such a thing? But if you actually look in the trope, at that point there's a sharshelet, right? That means that at that moment, it says when he hesitated, right? Can somebody, I don't do it well. Who does a good sharshelet? Beat my mind. In other words, his desire is to go one way, and his neshama, his superego, wants to go the other way, and he is stuck. So he gives voice to that. And in that moment, he's not in denial of anything. In fact, he's moving right into the source of his pain and his struggle. He's acknowledging where he is stuck. And this is how the Sfat Emet is reading it. In his act of truly inhabiting his place of being powerless in that moment, that's how he allowed the hand of God to move him to the right thing to do. He no longer could control his actions in that moment. In that sense, the Sfat Emet is saying he gave up his free will. Now, whether you buy that or not, you might not buy it, the Sfat Emet's interpretation here, that's okay. But whether you buy it or not, I think he's saying something quite profound and really important for us to contemplate today, because there are times in the journey of life when we are overwhelmed with a situation which is just so much greater than we are, where we feel truly helpless. And the first step is to bring our full awareness to every dimension of that helplessness, not to go into denial, not to push it away, but to confront it head on, to proverbially speak it before God. That's kind of how we frame it in Jewish terms. Pouring your heart out, allowing that grief to be real, because then it can begin to transform us. I think when the Sfat Emet is talking about letting go of your free will, what he's really saying is, you know, in these moments when we're so overwhelmed and we feel trapped, our emotional experience is we have no more free will. Right? We don't. We feel like we can't act. We can't move because we don't know what to do. So in a sense, letting go of your free will is acknowledging that you don't feel like you have any free will. You are helpless. You are out of control in that moment. That's how I read what the Sfat Emet is trying to say in that moment. You know, because in such moments, that's when we feel like we're losing something so precious, but we're helpless to do anything about it. And here's the thing, folks. At that moment, that's what sometimes we call hitting rock bottom, right? And ironically, when you hit rock bottom, that's when all potential and possibility is born. This is what's behind the whole 12-step movement. I'm getting very psychological today and, you know, psycho-spiritual today in this sermon. The 12-step movement is all about sometimes things happen to us in our lives, sometimes addictions, other things. We fall into a hole, and we have to acknowledge we can't get out of it by ourselves. And we have to, before, in the presence of others, acknowledge our pain and our grief and our struggle. And ironically, in that moment, we allow the pain and the grief to become our teacher. You know, it's hard to explain for those who haven't been there. But if you have been there, I think you understand how this works. That when we truly acknowledge the extent of our being trapped, and we truly listen to it, there is something in that pain and in that suffering that can then lead us forward, even when we don't feel like we have the will or the strength to do it. There is something in that can lead us ultimately out of that hole. I had a spiritual teacher once who said, you know, whenever you're going through any kind of psychological pain or suffering, it's your soul's way of telling you that whatever path you're on isn't serving you anymore. And it's time to reevaluate the path that you're on. Very powerful stuff. So here we are in democracy grief. And Michelle Goldberg talked about it very well. She said, you know, once you reach that point, she talks about letting that grief teach us. She said, left to fester, it can lead to withdrawal and apathy. But channeled properly, it can lead to an uprising. And that's, I think, a very powerful point right there. Channeled properly, it can lead to an uprising. So we're about to go into Hanukkah. Right? I need to say any more. I'll tell you what, there's the famous machloket that many of you know from the Talmud between Hillel and Shammai about how do you light the menorah? Right? Shammai says you start with the first night with all eight, and then you decrease each night until you go down to one on the final night. Hillel says, no. You start with one on the first night and you go all the way up to eight. Now, Shammai, you know, I like to say he was very left-brained. You know, he was very, very sort of like a mathematical correspondence, right? There were, on the holiday of Sukkot, you have a decreasing number of bulls that were sacrificed every day, so you decrease the candles, you know, corresponding to that. But Hillel understands something quite beautiful. He says, Ma'alim b'kodesh v'lo yordin. He says, in matters of sacredness, in other words, in matters of spirit, in matters of soul, Ma'alim v'lo yordin, what does that mean? We go up, we don't go down. Right? That's the symbol. That's the whole symbol of the cruise of oil, which is, you know, newsflash, that was told many centuries later. Right, it's the same idea though. It's the military victory which symbolizes this indomitable spirit within the Jewish people that we do not, in all generations, no matter how much the darkness encroaches, we have within us a light. So we light a candle, and then that leads to another candle. And that leads to another candle, and so on, until the darkness is driven back. That is the essential gesture of the role of the Jewish people in history. It's the gesture behind our survival through countless persecutions and dark times. We respond to the darkness. We channel it into the light. That's the essence of this moment in time that we're celebrating. So we should celebrate it and learn its meaning, that we are here to transform the pain and the grief that we know in our society right now into action. Right? We need to be able to defend democracy itself because it has been a great blessing to the Jewish people. We have to do everything we can because there are those in power who want to take it away. So the Jewish thing to do is to defend it. I'm very grateful to be the rabbi of this community. I'm very grateful that a couple of weeks ago we had this really well-attended meeting of people interested in raising the profile of social justice activities in this congregation so that we can chart pathways to channel the grief, to channel the darkness into the light. But one of the things that we know from 12-step, from therapy, and from the Torah is that we can't do it by ourselves. We need each other. We need to work together as a community. So let's get to work. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. We continue with the Chatzi Kaddish before Musaf on 184.